It is an honor to have Reverend Jim Foti as our speaker this morning. For the past 5 months, he has been serving as First Unitarian Society here in Madison as the assistant sabbatical minister while Reverend Kelly Crocker has been on sabbatical. Jim is a Milwaukee native. He earned his BA degree here in Madison at the UW of Wisconsin, and he took his Master of Divinity degree at Meadville Theological School in Chicago in 2013. From 2014 to 2022, he served as assistant minister at the First Unitarian Society of Minneapolis. And recently, he served as assistant sabbatical minister at First Unitarian Society in Milwaukee. And this past November, he received the prestigious 2023 Skinner Sermon Award. The Skinner Sermon Award honors Clarence Skinner, the late dean of the Tufts College School of Religion in Medford, Massachusetts, and a major voice of prophetic religious liberalism. This award is, let me quote what it says, open to any Unitarian Universalist layperson, religious educator, or minister. It was established to stimulate preaching concerned with the social implications of religion, particularly needed in this period of history. End of quote. The first Skinner Sermon Award was granted in 1959. And when you look down the list of all those who have been recipients, it reads like a list of very prominent ministers and lay people throughout those years. The title of this sermon, Resisting Tyranny, is quite appropriate to this period of history and political climate in our society today. So, without further ado, welcome to Prairie, Jim.
Thank you. It's very exciting for me to be somewhere that's not called First Unitarian Society. I've got three of those under my belt. I've got a few more I could go to, but Prairie for today is great. And thank you for having me, and thank you for that introduction, Reverend Ralph. It's been great to meet you and great to be here for the first time. When we were preparing for this service, I asked whether I might share the sermon that won the award, and I was grateful that the answer was yes, as it does save me some effort from starting off with a blank page. But something to know about me is that before I was a professional minister, I was a professional editor. And so, of course, I have been compelled to make a few adjustments every time I give this sermon. So if you have read or heard the original, there will be some things that are familiar and some things that are different. For most of you who are probably normal people who don't look up sermons on the internet, it will all be fresh. And I'm hopeful there will be moments of resonance for all of us. Whenever I give a sermon about something like death or grief or authoritarianism, I feel deeply grateful to anyone who knows the title and still comes to the service. But truly, I thank you all for being here. I've been giving presentations and sermons about rising authoritarianism since the summer of 2016. It felt a little lonely those first few years. The idea of America becoming a dictatorship was not part of mainstream conversations the way it is today. And I was often surprised by how thankful people were to me for bringing up the topic, for naming what was and still is going on, for affirming their sense that our democracy and our civic institutions are at great risk. 8 years on, things are still not well, but awareness of what's happening is much broader. And continuing to talk about it has so much value. Talking about it can help us figure out what to do together. And a congregation is a good place to have this conversation. A good congregation, an honest congregation, is a place to talk about the hard stuff, the real stuff of this world. To look at big questions about life and power and oppression. To examine questions through the lens of our most deeply held values. And to seek and hold the answers in community, where we can find support and figure out actions to take to bring about the world we wish to see. And Wisconsin is a good place to have this kind of conversation. Everyone who lives here has been involved has been an involuntary participant in a 14-year experiment to try to permanently establish authoritarian rule across all three branches of government, with increasing restrictions on voting and a not at all representative state legislature. Now, the people of Wisconsin are a complicated mix, as many of us know from our own families. There are those who adhere to conspiracy theories about stolen elections and woke takeovers, and these folks might actually welcome an autocratic ruler. They would rather be ruled than led. At the same time, there are so many of us who believe in secular government and fair electoral maps, the rainbow of human diversity, women's bodily autonomy, and the common good. It's a complicated mix indeed. And throughout this trying time, with authoritarian maneuvers finding some success at the state and local levels, daily life has gone on as normal for most people. Offering a veneer of normalcy while the foundations of a democracy are being eroded is a tactic straight out of the authoritarian playbook. Another tactic is to fan the flames of hatred about perceived internal and external threats to society and the nation. In 1930s Germany, the made-up internal threat was the Jewish community. Right now, in our own company, trans folk are the made-up threat of choice. It is no accident that the percentage of Jews in Germany in 1933 and the percentage of trans-identified adults in the U.S. today, those percentages are nearly identical, between 0.5% and 0.75%. And similarly to Germany, we are seeing internally displaced refugees by the thousands, moving from one state to another in search of existential safety. The strategy of demonizing a tiny, often misunderstood minority and using religion to do so is a tactic right out of the authoritarian playbook. Tyrants always punch down for political gain. There are countless crises, of course, that those of us in ministry could choose to focus on. But to my mind, very little else will matter if these kinds of things continue and we become more of an authoritarian country. Every one of our UU principles has been under siege, from the inherent dignity of all people, to the use of the democratic process, to the interdependent web of life that sustains us. And the values highlighted by the proposed revisions of our UU bylaws, values such as pluralism, equity, and justice, these would be difficult to live out in a less free society. Now, history has generally not been kind to congregations and ministers and everyday people who have faced authoritarianism and fascism. First, there tends to be complacency, then looking away, then desensitization, and then voluntary or forced collaboration. All these things have tended to happen in reliable succession. Among the good news is the fact that the present-day United States has some advantages that have made authoritarianism less of a slam dunk here than in other countries. We have a diverse population. We have no one dominant church. We have still independent, if struggling, journalism. And we still have strong civil institutions. But with autocratic and theocratic leaders continuing to take brutal aim at these strengths every day, we know that it's still important for each of us to remain vigilant. The rapid flow of events can make us forget that a lot of what we are seeing actually isn't new. In the words of Adrienne Marie Brown, the African-American author and activist, things are not getting worse, they're getting uncovered. We must hold each other tight and continue to pull back the veil. The underlying American values that are allowing current events to go as they have been going, these are the same values that have existed for a long time. The storyline of domination, of the powerful taking what and who they want, is a main storyline of how our country was founded, built, and expanded. And that storyline continues to this day. So it is both painful and beneficial that things are getting uncovered. The truth is that Americans with authoritarian tendencies have always been with us and are likely to always be with us. Globally and nationally, authoritarian citizens can be found across the political spectrum. While autocracy seems to lean right, as it has in recent years, like in places like Hungary and India, there are also left-leaning people who would welcome and have welcomed a dictator who thinks like they do. Now, maybe some of you have heard of this, but there's actually a simple test that can predict whether an individual is likely to favor authoritarianism. It was developed in the early 1990s by a professor named Stanley Feldman. It's four short either-or questions about parenting. Parenting, not politics, because researchers discovered that authoritarianism is actually more related to personality than to political preferences. I'll read these, and you can take the quiz yourself if you like, and we can find out in coffee hour who's an authoritarian. Please tell me which one of the two choices you think is more important for a child. To have independence or to have respect for elders? To have obedience or self-reliance? To be considerate or to be well-behaved? To have curiosity or good manners? These simple questions have turned out to be remarkably good at predicting authoritarian tendencies, and they've been used in research ever since. The respondents who choose the more hierarchical, rule-oriented answers, obedience over self-reliance, good manners over curiosity, these people are more likely to be authoritarian. And because parenting perspectives are passed down in families for generations, starting at birth, you can see why this kind of thinking might be hard to dislodge. It might be immune to political arguments entirely. It's a primal way of knowing. An estimated 30 to 40% of Americans have authoritarian tendencies. And as is obvious from current events, from small town school board meetings all the way up to the Supreme Court, the presence of those tendencies is going to be with us for a while. It's been a little daunting for me to realize that I expect to be keeping an eye on authoritarianism for the rest of my ministry and the rest of my life. But I know that that realization, that change for me, is a sign of the privilege I've enjoyed prior to the events of the past several years. I'll never forget the sentiment, the words of welcome, if you will, that a black social media commentator who now goes by the handle Absurdist Words offered to white people in late 2016. I didn't find these words absurd at all. This feeling you have right now, amazement that the country could be so short-sighted, that it could embrace hate so tightly, welcome. This despair and dread you feel, the indignation, the bewilderment, the hurt, the powerlessness, the fear for family and livelihood, welcome. That knot in your stomach, the feeling of heartache, that uncertainty about your safety, the deep sense of fundamental injustice, welcome. He goes on to say, I do not say this to diminish what you feel today. What you feel is real and valid. I'm giving you an opportunity to truly empathize. For it is that lack of empathy that allowed America to shrug as the marginalized shouted warnings. I've read similar thoughts from other African Americans and from Native Americans. Welcome, white folks, to this messed up country that we've already been living in. This country that has felt to us like a dictatorship for quite some time. So there are plenty of people in America who have felt powerlessness, who have had to learn resilience and resistance, who have planted a garden in the backyard when it wasn't safe to sit on the front porch, who have had to ceaselessly work for freedom. What has been happening lately to America as a whole has always been happening to some of its people. American authoritarianism was not invented in 2016. It was revealed anew. So what do we do with this chronic illness that our country has? How do we deal with the flare-ups and the uncertain outlook? How do we live lives of resistance? There may not be a cure for America's authoritarian streak, but there are tactics and strategies and resources and plenty of evidence of what works. One piece of advice I've already tried to demonstrate is how important it is for white people and white-dominated institutions to listen to people of color. This is something that has been happening increasingly in recent years across Unitarian Universalism, by forming social justice partnerships in our local communities, by centering stories of the marginalized, and by following leadership of our BIPOC congregants and our national staff, which I believe is now 40% people of color at the national level. Outside of our UU movement, we can see around our country how people of color, often younger people of color, are making bold statements resisting the forces of authoritarianism. I think of those two Justins in Tennessee who became instantly famous last year, Justin Jones and Justin Pearson. Both under 30, they helped to lead protests against the needless carnage of gun violence, and then were expelled from their seats in the Tennessee legislature. As you probably know, they were propelled right back into office to keep fighting the tyranny of their gerrymandered one-party state. And shortly after, on a Sunday morning, Mr. Pearson, the son of a pastor, was the featured speaker at the Church of the River, Memphis's main UU congregation, in a profoundly moving and raucous two-hour service. This was a great example of a more privileged church making space for and amplifying voices that are frequently marginalized. Good things happen when people unite across religions to resist tyranny. And an important message that's being underscored for us is that it is not too late. It is not too late to resist tyranny. It's not too late for the people of Tennessee to fight for laws that reflect their values. It's not too late to try to protect a small town school board or a library board from a white Christian nationalist agenda, something that is happening around this state right now. It's not too late to turn the good ship Wisconsin back toward the progressive ideals that once made it great. Demoralization and hopelessness are tactics straight out of the authoritarian playbook. So it's definitely not too late to remind ourselves that it's not too late, and to remind ourselves that there's a role for everyone. Some people may not think of themselves as activists, but being a citizen, being a human, comes with obligations to fellow humans and the whole world. Your neutrality will not be appreciated. So many actions have value, like participating in electoral campaigns that speak to your values, or working as a poll worker or an election judge to help to keep the machinery of democracy moving. As frustrating and constraining as they can be, elections, as we know, still have huge consequences. We can also take part in protests, particularly well-organized tactical ones that are led by marginalized groups and have specific goals around turnout and visibility. There are also more private forms of resistance that involve only yourself, such as being well-informed about current events and about the history of oppressions and authoritarianism. If you haven't already watched it, I highly recommend the Reverend Cecilia Kingman's Berry Street essay about fascism delivered 1 year ago at the 2023 General Assembly. Another important form of resistance is to make sure you don't accept the normalization of anything that diminishes human flourishing, such as mass shootings or police brutality or laws against trans people or women. Followers of the authoritarian playbook love this kind of normalization. They want you to feel confused, bombarded, and hopeless that things just might have to be this way. It's a strategy employed to wear people out. Your internal resistance is so important, so they don't succeed. Your resistance relies on your resilience, and your resilience relies on rest. So be sure to take breaks from the news, from the social media on your phone, from the work of justice. This can be hard for some people to do, given the scope of the challenges. And it can be especially hard to do if you like to help with campaigns here in Wisconsin, where there's an election cycle every 10 minutes. So take the advice of Tricia Hersey, the self-appointed nap bishop. Have you heard of her? She literally wrote a book on the topic called Rest is Resistance, a manifesto. Saying no and holding boundaries is important, she says, adding, to me, that's justice. That's liberation. That's freedom. It is freedom to say no sometimes. So budget your time and energy for the long haul. This advice was something I kept in mind this past spring when I volunteered to go door to door to support school board and city council candidates in the small Wisconsin town where I spend a good chunk of my time. I do not consider door knocking to be a gift of mine or even something I enjoy, but it seemed like a good way to give a little of myself. I may not like canvassing, but I'd like living under a dictatorship even less. And so another volunteer and I trudged from house to house, equipped with inadequate brochures and with lawn signs that even agreeable voters did not want in their yards for fear of creating tension with their neighbors. When we knocked and rang, most doors stayed closed, but we were able to mark a few contacts and get people thinking about the important choices ahead. We did not come close to finishing our long list of houses to visit, but I declined to keep going beyond the end of my shift, knowing that there would be other days and other volunteers. The challenges of that afternoon were a reminder to me to increase my commitment to spiritual practices that reconnect me with life's beauty in this extra difficult year. I was also reminded to focus on stories of liberation in this state, like the restoration of access to women's reproductive care, new legislative maps that are closer to the ideals of democracy, things like that. There are signs of hope. And before I close, hope is what I want to talk about. Because when we're talking about the long haul work of resisting tyranny, it can be helpful to remember the work of Joanna Macy, who wrote a book that some of you may have read called Active Hope. Macy defines hope not as something you feel, but as something you do. Active hope is a practice, she writes. Like Tai Chi or gardening, it's something we do rather than have. She advises us to decenter our feelings and center our intent. Since active hope doesn't require our optimism, she says, we can apply it even in areas where we feel hopeless. The guiding impetus is intention. Rather than weighing our chances and proceeding only when we feel hopeful, we focus our intention and let it be our guide. As we all continue our work to resist authoritarianism for the good of our country and everyone in it, may our intentions be our guide. May love be our guide. May we stay at each other's sides, take care of the vulnerable, and listen to the wisdom that is all around us. Together, forward is the way. May it be so, and amen.
Thank you, Jim.
I've seen different things in different congregations in terms of justice work and keeping it in front of the congregation. One is, I talk about it a lot when I'm up here, so you probably thought the pulpit is a great place to remind people of both the work to be done and also to provide a pastoral piece of it, because it's hard stuff. That's the thing. I would always encourage, I think congregations are a great place to do this because you can get your bucket filled back up with like-minded people when you come on Sunday or when you have a meeting. It can be really hard for, say, my mom. She goes to these school board meetings, you know, kind of sometimes by herself, and then she regroups with a smaller community. So I would say have support for that, whether it's even just potluck of the activists or something like that. So I would do that. I would say that. Don't go alone is a good reminder for you to make sure you have a critical mass of people before you embark on something so you don't burn out. Because sometimes you'll have one or two people in a congregation who are really fired up about something and they end up kind of alone in the work and then they burn out. And so, you know, before you decide on a project, make sure there's enough of you to carry it through. And then if it's, you know, if it's your issue and your congregation isn't doing it, maybe then go do it somewhere else, or at least there's other people to be with. You do the action, you do the reflection, and that's part of the regeneration that helps you do it over the long term. And also, I mean, you know, mission statements matter, right? There's sometimes, you know, how do you choose what to do is the other question, right? Climate is a disaster, right? Democracy is a disaster. Women's rights are a disaster, right? And so also being selective, and it's a hard choice. Like, we want to work on all of these things. None of them don't matter. But not all of us have to do all of those. And so that's another thing, is to sort of maybe focus for a while. Like, you know what, this year we're going to do democracy. Next year we're going to go back to working on the environment, and, you know, sort of don't select all. But I have a fair number of teens. We have a fair number of teens in our lives right now, and they're okay, but they're not great, right? I mean, they lost a couple of years of social development in schools. My niece was 8 when the government took a turn, right? And now she's 17. And so this is kind of normal for her. And I try to think of ways we can remind them of other ways of being. Like, for example, my niece is in Spain right now, so she's seeing how a country can do things differently, right? They responded to COVID differently. They already did their civil war and their fascism and got it. You know, they went down that dark road, and some of these other countries are committed to never doing that again, right? And I feel like ours isn't quite as committed. So offering other ways of being and just being supportive of young people right now and accepting how hard it was to be a student during the pandemic and how hard it is, because, right, I mean, we didn't have book banning when I was in school. We didn't have any of this stuff. And so, and when they show an interest, really support it, right? When they show an interest, when they take the initiative to write a letter to the school board or to the library and say, I want to read this book, you know, if they may be so hopeless that they don't see another way, right? And sometimes you can point out that, you know, actually in some places it isn't this way, and if you'd like it to be this way, you can actually do something, because a letter from a student to a school board is more powerful than something from me, probably, in some ways. It will get more attention in the community. So there are steps they can take. But yeah, it is, part of it is painting that picture of that better world, because we have trouble holding it in our minds sometimes. So a lot of it's based in reality. You know, I live in a rural area. It's not amazing out there, right? It's not, they're not getting the nice new restaurants and the cool apartment buildings. You know, the sense of abandonment of rural America is not, it's not totally made up, right? I mean, yes, there are some pretty heavy subsidies and some other things, but, you know, it does not, flourishing is not happening. You know, there are mobile home parks tucked in the trees in the back. So there, some of those folks who don't like, who they see the American carnage, right? They're feeling it, and some of that speaks to them. And on the left in the cities, it's not great for everybody either. So I think questioning the systems it's rooted in reality. You know, tearing them all down and having a revolution and anarchy is actually not also a path to thriving, as we've seen in other countries. And so trying to balance that with, you know, incremental change, and this is not the convenient season for change and things like that. That is real and tricky. And I don't have the exact answer for all of that, except to name the reality that it's a rough, America is rough for a lot of people. A lot of people of a lot of different backgrounds. And when you can support institutions and officials who recognize that and have constructive ways of addressing it rather than just venting, I think that's good. So.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate all of your insights this morning.